Welcome to the second episode of Priestly Passion, where I speak to Catholic priests in the Archdiocese of Galveston, Houston. Today I'm speaking with Father Charles Doomby, who serves at St. Mary as a purification of the Catholic Church, located in Houston, Texas, in the Third Ward area. Thank you for having me today.
Thank you. Where are you coming from?
So the interesting thing is, I graduated from Texas Southern University in 2013, mm-hmm. and I've always been intrigued and captivated by this church since it's like so close, and this mm-hmm. is the only Catholic church that I've ever seen in this area, and so I'm glad to finally be here mm-hmm. in this format to get to interview a priest, so yeah. Thank you. First off, did I say your name correctly?
Yeah, I'm Father Charles Ndumbi.
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 Okay.
You know, it's an African way of saying it's... Here it has been a bit difficult for people to pronounce that name, Ndumbi. You know, yeah, the way I'm pronouncing it is Ndumbi. So I let them just say, call me Charles, that's all.
Okay, thank you for the clarification.
Yeah.
So let's get started. Yes. How long have you been a priest?
I've been a priest now for 2 years and some few months.
Okay.
Yeah.
So why don't you tell us how you discerned the call to the priesthood? What happened when you were younger that ignited the spark within to make you want to serve in this capacity?
Yeah, first of all, I didn't have that idea of becoming a priest at one, first of all. And I was thinking probably I'd like to become a soccer player, you know, because for us in the neighborhood, we used to be playing soccer. These children, it is not like football here and basketball, but for us, the passion, the first passion is just soccer. And then as we were playing soccer, and then sometimes I started playing with the local team in my place. So we were going to play in the Congo, Democratic Republic of Congo. I didn't start from there, but I'll come back to that. So I used to be going and playing, and then they selected me too. No, I should be playing for the senior team. Meanwhile, I was still 12 years old, imagine. And as I was playing like that, I started now skipping classes. Mm. And my dad was not in favor of that. So he told me that, no, as you are now skipping classes, so I have to send you somewhere. You will not be skipping classes. So he sent me to a boarding school. And that boarding school happened to be a minor seminary. So when I went there, I started going slowly, slowly. And then I seen priests, the way they were living, you know, the way they were interacting with each other, the way they were doing their service. And I felt like, okay, I'm really attracted to this life. And later on, I came to discover the Society of the Divine Word, missionaries. So I was interested to know more about them. And then I saw that now they were going all over the world to preach the good news. And I said, oh, that's a good news for me. I can also try to do that. Even in my own country, we have many different people. We have many different languages. Mm. So I say, okay, let me go, because it will be like I'm discovering everything. So that's the time it started. And then when I went to SVD, and then I talked to them, and then they accepted me, and I started following, and I was very happy until today. I'm still very happy.
Where'd you get your degree in seminary?
Okay, you know, here it is different, the way you call it, degree, right, and our education system is like, okay, first of all, we were colonized by Belgium, mm-hmm. and then we took the same system. So there we start with nursing classes, which takes about 3 years, and then you go for, as we call it, primary school, which takes also 6 years, and then secondary school, which takes also 6 years before going to university or what we call college. Mm-hmm. Yes, that's the way our education system is. So I went there around, I was 13 years old, to the boarding school, so I went to class 3. I started to class 3 until class 6, and then I was done. Mm-hmm. So it was basically, you know, the minor seminary was just a very nice time there, because we had many things at the same time. We had a program of the day. You work up like this, you go for church, and then you come out, you go for breakfast, and then you go to class, You have a break, and then you go for lunch, and then you rest a bit, you go to work, and so on. So it was like activities every day, and then you go to sports, and it was very nice, well organized, and if you are there, you just enjoy, you get into the mood, and then...
That's in the boarding school?
Yes. Okay. That's the way it was.
So what seminary did you end up going to?
Seminary, it was in my own country. It was it's a famous one called... in French, it's called Petit Seminaire de Kabwe. It's a minor seminary of Kabwe. And it was like something like 75 kilometers, let's say more than 100 miles from the main town. So that's where we were. And when we are talking about more than 100 miles, so the roads are not like here. Mm-hmm. The roads are not good. So you can spend hours for maybe to cross 5 or more than 10 miles. You can spend hours. Imagine which kind of roads it can be. Mm-hmm. But sometimes we could walk from there to the town. Mm-hmm. It was taking us almost a full day walking, because you walk and then you stop, you rest a bit, and then you continue again, and so on.
What did you get your degree in seminary?
Yes, we're getting the degrees like any other school.
Right.
That's the way it was. That's secondary school. We're getting degrees like any other school. So now, when I went to SVD, I went for pre-philosophy. Mm. And pre-philosophy took just one full year. There, there's not something like very academic, but it is just talking to us about the congregation, what we are doing in the congregation, how we should be living with brothers and our brothers, priests and brothers, and so on. So now, after that, I went for philosophy, which took 3 years. I got the degree, 3 years. And then, after the philosophy, I went to novitiate before. And then the novitiate, I did my first vows, and then I was sent to Kenya. Mm. Yeah. So when I was sent to Kenya, I had to spend a full year learning English. Mm. So, you know, English, it is a British one. It's not American, if mm-hmm. you can say. With an English accent and a British accent and a Kenyan accent too, you know. Each language can change according to the places. So I spent one full year learning English, and then I started learning also. I went for theology now. And then theology, it was 4 years of theology.
What drew you to philosophy and theology? Like, what were some things that you thought were interesting about them?
I didn't get you.
What were some things that you thought were interesting about philosophy and theology?
Philosophy, it was like to help you to think more. You know? To start at least opening yourself. You know, not being closed. You know, philosophy is, even though we're going through the history of philosophy and other philosophers who have been thinking, is you can say that human being is embedded into philosophy. Mm-hmm. That's it. So philosophy is like taking everything, questioning also everything. Mm-hmm. Not questioning because you have to question, but you have to find answers, and then at least have a critical. If you have a critical mind, so it's not just to have just a critical mind because of having a critical mind, but because you need to build something. Mm. So now theology, it was, okay, when they are talking about theology, it's basically they are talking about God. That's what we think, no? God. Theology tells God. No. We are studying about how the history of salvation came about. You see, all these things we'll read some other sciences in the theology, we go left, right, but at the end, there's only one thing, one God which is Christ, who's the center of everything there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so in theology we are doing different sciences, different subjects. I can call it like a different subject. But most of them were just coming to one thing. Jesus Christ. See? According to me, that's my view. That's everything is just centered to him.
Right.
Yeah. And you can, when we come there in front to preach, all these things we are learning, how to preach, how to stand in front of people, how to behave with people sometimes, what is the law of the church, you know, that's why we have canon law, we have some laws you have to follow once you are in a parish, what you have to do, what you should not have to do, and you know, that's according to the book. So now, according to the reality on the spot, something also different, no? You have to adapt also. It depends.
Oh, I like that, how you said theology is all summed up in Jesus Christ.
Yes.
So, in the person of Jesus Christ, everything about God in theology is there. So, that's a good way of looking at it.
Yeah.
So, this is a different question now. I was trying to wait from... like your upbringing and what drew you to the priesthood. So I noticed that you said you're from the Congo.
Yeah, Congo, Democratic Republic of Congo.
Right. And so the continent from Africa has seen like an immense expansion in Catholicism. And you have like these really strong Orthodox cardinals like Cardinal Orenze and then Cardinal Serra who are just like vocal about Orthodoxy. So what do you think makes Africa such a strong place for Catholicism?
I would not see it like very strong place of Catholicism, because if you see Africa, you cannot think that Africa, most of the people, they do make that mistake. Africa is like a country.
Right.
So that's why some other places I'm going, and then they say, oh, you are from Africa. Are you from Nigeria? That's the only country they might know. Oh, it is famous. But once we are talking about Africa, it's a different world. We have many different people, many different religions. Especially when we are talking, for example, in the northern part of Africa.
It's like Muslim.
That's Muslim, but part. And when you are talking about probably Nigeria, they are sharing. Muslims are more than Christians. And not only Christians, but we see also Catholics now. Because they can call themselves Christians, but now Catholic. How many are they? See, I don't know the exact numbers. So now, coming down, we have also some what they call animism religions. You know, they believe in the nature. They are there too. But they are no more much... embed into people's life, but now it is just Christianity. Christianity, we can say, is still is a strong way, but not talking about Catholicism first of all. Talk about Christianity. Christianity, more people are Christians, but the percentage of Catholics has gone a bit down. Let me talk about my own country, where I know better. So, in like in the Democratic Republic of Congo, we can say, okay, people are, let's say, maybe now 55% of Christians. So, in the 55, you can find 40, 49 Catholics. You see? But Catholics is still a very strong voice in the life of the country. You see? Like recently we had elections, no? They will be publishing the results this coming Sunday. But you could see that among all the religions, even though they are coming together, if the Catholic Church says something, you will see people just trying to follow. So the church is still trying to be strong, to help people that know they should follow the correct way. Not just following people because, okay, this one has money. You know, these third world countries, this has money, this does not have money, and then elections, a lot of corruptions, left, right. But the church still standing and then telling people the correct thing they should be thinking of. Like, recently I followed the The Archbishop of Kinshasa is a new one. He has now almost a month now as Archbishop. So in his homily for Christmas, he said, even though people are coming to give you money, take that money because it's the money of the country. Mm-hmm. But once you go in front of the machine to vote, vote with your conscience.
Right.
See? At least the church is still coming up with some good ideas to help. Like in 2016, I was still in the Congo, and it was almost the end of the second term of the president. So there were some kind of tensions coming down. You know, the country was going to chaos. And then the Conference of Bishops came up and then at least helped people to come together. Oh, let us talk. Let us make a deal. Let us make an agreement that, no, we should move people forward. So that's it. So the Catholic Church in Africa, okay, I cannot talk about Africa in general. Let me talk about this specific country in Congo is still strong and helping people to do the correct thing.
So straying away from the whole continent, just in the Democratic Republic of Congo, in Catholicism there, like, what do you think is some lessons in America that we can learn, like, about our faith and, like, following our conscience? Like, what's some stuff that in America we could imitate?
Probably we can copy both sides. Both sides, because the church is different everywhere you will go. You know, everywhere you go, here they are much more advanced than there, because, you know, it's just 50 years old of independence. Most of the countries, they are in their 50s. So when missionaries came there, they just showed like it is the church who has everything. You know, the people should not be working. Come and ask for help from the church. Do this from the church. So it was the church like giving to people, not receiving from people. But here, I've seen that the church is more people's, how do you call it again, responsibility. Mm-hmm. So the church is my church. You know, you take it as your own. That lesson is still lacking again in some other parts of Africa. Okay, let me talk about the Congo. In some other parts of the Congo. Mm-hmm. But you can see there are much differences when you go into villages and in big towns. Big towns, at least it's coming up. Like here, I know people now are giving more for the church, supporting the church, supporting also some missions within. And what we can learn is that both sides, they are great things. You know, there they can learn that, no, the church is our own. And here too, we have a lot of lessons to give, because I think the United States has been far much ahead from other people. Mm-hmm. You know, learning, it depends on somebody's experience, what you can see that now you can learn. And you know, religion also depends on the culture. Mm-hmm. It is also depending on the culture. So that's the main point. So the culture is also a way of how do you bring Christianity within that culture. It's different.
Right. So it's different cultures between here and Congo.
Yes, very different cultures.
How do you think the faith, how do you think the faith interacts with the culture? Like the difference you see between the Congo and like here?
Oh, yeah. You know, America is a world where they are open-minded. Mm-hmm. You know, most of them, they are open-minded. And going back there, for us, imagine even the beginning of 20th century, they could not allow a lady wearing a trouser, a pants, coming into the church. Mm-hmm. It was like, oh my God. But now, at least people are coming up and then they start really, just putting it, taking it easy. Oh, wearing something short and coming to the church, they will not. There are still people who cannot stand that.
Mm-hmm.
You see, because it is still in their mind that no, ladies' body, we cannot be seeing it everywhere. We cannot even see the knee of a lady.
Right.
People, there are still people who are having that mentality, and then they'll say, okay. But in Africa also, there are some other places where you find people who are still not having clothes to wear. And they are coming to church like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember one priest was telling us a story about his experience in South Sudan. And that's all. But culture is different. The way you conceived, the way you of living of people, and then try to actualize the message of Christ. The message of the Bible. Don't take it, because this Bible also was written in a culture, in a context.
Mm-hmm.
So how can that context help us too? This message, yes, it was in this context, but how can it come into practice for us? You know, it's a different way of relating to the Bible. So, no, that's the way we have to be careful about that. Not thinking that, no, what I'm seeing in my country, so I must bring it here.
Right.
No, I have to learn what is here and then put my foot somewhere. And then to stand, you know, that's the way I'm seeing it.
So leading into the next question that's related to that, we are called to love God and neighbor. How do you carry out your vocation as a priest with love every day?
Yeah, that's a good question. As a priest, you know, the other day I was celebrating, was it August 6th on the Transfiguration Day? It was my second anniversary of priesthood. And then I was saying that I'm trying to live fully in a way that I have to cheer up my life. I have to be happy. I'm trying at all means to be happy. Happiness, I found that now happiness is the key to success. So if I want to succeed, I should not be nurturing my mind with negative ways of thinking. You see, that's the way I've been living for the last 2 years only of priesthood. I'm trying let me be positive. And personally, I do believe that people are very good. They can say, okay, circumstances can change people, but I do believe in people changing and becoming good. Let's take the example of the Bible of Saul.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he was Saul and became Paul. Paul, which was a Roman name, let's say like that. A Greek name or a Roman name, because it is the same, Saul and Paul.
Mm-hmm.
But this man was there to make the church suffer, but he became the advocate of the church. And I do believe that in this world we still have this kind of people who can also become advocates of the church. That's the way also I'm living as a young man, you know, as a young man with all the challenges of as a young man, you know. But I have to cheer up life. That no, okay, this is what I've chosen, and I'm happy in what I'm doing. What I'm doing is that when I'm doing my work, I have to do it in the full.
Mm.
With happiness, with commitment, because with dedication, I have to be dedicated to what I'm doing. Like, when I'm coming for a mass, for example, I take it very seriously. I take my time to prepare my mass. A daily mass, so I will have at least 30 minutes for a daily mass. For the Sunday mass, I have the full week here. I can read and then go out and then have to reflect. I can read some other things. All this to have my homily for Sunday. And personally, what I've decided to be doing is that I always write my homilies. I don't talk about out of my mind. I always write, put down what I have to say. That's what I've learned, and I'm trying to be doing like that, and especially having a positive mind into my ministries.
Do you find yourself, since you want to be more positive this turnaround, now that you've celebrated 2 years, do you find yourself, or do you hope that more people will bring out the positive, like the clergy, or not the clergy, but like the lady will bring out the positivity in you, or you bring the positivity to them, or it's like a
mutual? It's both sides. Both sides, you know. I remember I had an experience in one of the parishes. I would like not to say one the name for to respect them. You know, I went there just a visit, and then you find that people are not very happy. That's the way of talking to them. You know, personally, I like smiling. That's my nature. And I made it a part of my nature. Just a smile, a little smile, can change somebody's way of looking at people or thinking of people. Just a smile. Then I went there, and they are telling me, you know, can you stay here? I said, well, no, I cannot, because I'm not appointed here. I just came to help.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no, here, at least your smile, you know. And you find also that some other people also bringing that smile, that beautiful smile. And this has been like my way of talking. Every day after Mass, I say, put a beautiful smile on your face. It is healthy. It can help somebody also. So I always trying to say that, be happy, put a beautiful smile on your face. It can heal somebody.
I was looking last night on Twitter, and they were having a conversation about the sign of peace.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, on the sign of peace, we shake somebody's hand or embrace them or something like that. And some people were saying, like, that moment at church might be the only interaction that they might get the whole week to feel somebody loving them. And so maybe like that smile that you give may be the only time.
And you know, every Sunday, if I don't have any deacon, the parishioners of St. Mary of the Purification, they already know me. So once I'll pray the prayer of peace, after that, I'll stop. Instead of going to the traditional way of saying, let us give each other the sign of peace,
right,
I'll say, please put a beautiful smile on your face and let us share the sign of peace.
Right.
You know, at least you feel that, no, you relax people. At least once you see a smile coming from the other person. Personally, I believe that it can change somebody's way of thinking or way of looking at others. That's personally, I believe in that. Yeah.
Mm, that's a good way of looking at it. Do you have a favorite saint that you discovered, and like what lessons have they taught you to help you in your vocation?
The saints I would like to talk about is Charles Borromeo, is my patron saint. Mm. Because Charles Borromeo stood up and reformed the church. Because when we are talking today about seminaries and other things, it's because of Charles Borromeo. Mm. He's the one who made the church become at least form clergy and other people, you know. At least a clergy who can stand in front of people and have a reasonable thinking, you know, thinking correctly. Charles Borromeo is my hero. He's like, wow, this man was like, he stood up during for reformation of the church. So he reformed the church. And there is also a particular, okay, it's still blessed. In the Congo, we have Anarite Nengapeta. She was beatified in 1985 in the Congo by Saint John Paul II. Right now, Pope Saint John Paul II. So, it was during the time of war, and then. There were these militaries, they stopped her, and then they wanted to rape her. Meanwhile, she was a nun, And then she refused, and she protected also her sisters there. So she was killed because of her trust in God and believing in and not refusing.
Protecting like her chastity.
Yes, protecting her chastity and believing that no, she has to be pure from God. So these 2 years, I've been always looking at them and then praying that no, at least they can also inspire other people. And when it comes to their feast day, I like talking more about them than not doing anything. You know, Charles Borromeo is November 4th and Marita Nengapeta is December 1st.
Mm.
Yeah, so I like at least talking more about them those days if I'm the one saying mass.
So some in our culture view the priesthood as an unfair sacrifice. They say, like, I have to sacrifice marriage and family for a celibate life. Mm-hmm. To someone that is noticing or discerning the call to the priesthood, how do you answer the question, can I truly have a fulfilled life pursuing God's call to serve as a priest?
Because personally, I don't think that we have sacrificed the family life, no. Because right now, I have the biggest family in the world.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot feel myself like, oh no, now I didn't get married and then I'm missing children. No, that's not a debate for me. The other day it was last Sunday, we were celebrating Holy Family. And then I told them the story I had in Opelousas in Louisiana. We had a SVD youth meeting. So one girl asked me, Are you happy? Are you not missing your family, your dad, your mom, your siblings, your friends? I say, yes, I do miss them. But now I got another family, which is you. You are also you are part of my family. Because if you will see me on the way, you will not pass like that. You say, oh, Father Charles, how are you? You see, you know me. I'm now part of you because of Jesus Christ. He made us become one family by his death and resurrection.
Mm-hmm.
So we are now one family. I don't feel like I'm missing that part. No, I'm even part of a biggest family. Just check when, for example, when we are going for Thanksgiving, how many people can invite you? Christmas, how many people can invite you? New Year, how many people can invite you? You see, they say that you are now part of us. You are part of this family. And I do believe that I am part of this family, this big family of St. Mary of the Purification in Galveston, Houston, Archdiocese. You see, so I'm part of this family now. So I cannot feel that, no, for sure, my mom and my dad, I can miss them, but I'm part of this family. Many people come also for spiritual direction. Oh, Father, what do you think? Mm-hmm. Father, like, imagine I'm just in my 30s, and then you see this person who has been there before you coming to ask you for advice. You see? Just put yourself into those foods. And then sometimes, you know, the first time I became priest, and I saw this man was almost 50 something coming to me and asking me for advice. I was like, oh my God, he's serious now. You know, I was just a priest for 2 months, and then this person coming and very serious, and I was like, oh my God, so I have to take this task very seriously. You know, sometimes we take it a bit light, but the presence of people is not easy. It's also something very, 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 very precious, you know, very precious. Sometimes you take it easy, but it's very precious when people are coming to you and asking you, giving you all the trust, you know. It's heavy sometimes. It's heavy, but...
So it's not a loss, it's you gain so much more.
I gain more than just keeping for one.
Right.
Not being selfish. I can call it... Let me just put it in brackets, selfish, but this one is more. Mm-hmm. You are there for everyone. Mm-hmm. You're open.
All right. You got more brothers and sisters and moms and dads. All and of your them. Spiritual father.
And then they'll call me your son. Yes, mom. Yes, dad. Wherever I've been, you know, until today, if I go, like, I've been to Mississippi, Bay St. Louis, I've been to Florida, I've been to Arkansas, and I'll be going now to New Orleans just for 1 month to help. And you'll see people, oh, you are like my son. You see, oh, you are like, you know, and I'm happy with that. And wherever I'm going, and you start receiving calls, people calling you, Father Charles, how are you? You know?
Mm.
And you feel that, oh.
It's so welcoming. And it's like, yes, an extension of your own
welcome.
Family.
I'm welcomed. So I cannot feel like, okay, I'm much left back or left behind for other reasons now.
Mm.
I'm feeling that I'm part of the biggest family right now.
In the last question,
yes,
it says, what is the biggest advice you would give to someone that's discerning the priesthood?
The biggest advice is that open yourself.
What do you mean by that?
Open yourself. You know, there's something we call always the will of God. The will of God is not something like you get like a bottle of water like this on my table and then you start drinking. No. You know, priesthood and religious life doesn't come overnight. It is a process. It's a process of learning. Learning, sometimes you'll be discouraged. Sometimes you'll find that, okay, let me just try to go, to move on. And you find obstacles into your life. People discouraging you. But no, oh, where are you going? You should make children. You should do this. We have a family. This, you know. But it is up to you what you think that you'll be doing, which will make you very happy. And people should be doing for that. What you think that should make you a happy person? Is it being married? Because we have been also seeing people married, but they are not happy.
Mm-hmm.
We have also been seeing people who are also priests, but they are not happy. You know, both sides, we have all of us, we have problems at different levels. But that's why this formation takes time. For other people, it is almost 7, 10, 11, even more. It is just for you to think, to nurture this way of living. And I think anyone can achieve it if you are just putting yourself into that, opening yourself to the will of God. That's, I think, you'll be successful.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I can say.
Yeah, that's a very good answer. And I think you've given a lot of great explanations on the vocation to the priesthood and like your personal functions and roles that you do and like your background. So I appreciate you taking out the time today to answer these awesome questions and provide these amazing answers.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope and pray that your time here in residence at St. Mary's will be continued to carry out in love to everyone here.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be the conclusion of the interview. And I hope that you can come back again at another time to discuss something else for Priestly Passion.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It was very nice to have you here. And I really appreciate the idea. You know, when I read the message, I directly answered, because all these days I was not opening my emails and I found many messages there. So I was going one by one, and I took my day off. I went to Austin to visit my cousin who was there with his family. So that's the time even I checked my emails. And then I was, oh, there's this one. Okay, let me think of, well, let's put it in January 3rd. So it will be my day off, so we can have this talk. So thank you again for thinking of me.
Mm-hmm.
And may God bless you and be successful in what we are doing. Thank you very much for doing this.
Well, thank you for taking our time, and I hope that you guys continue to listen to the next episode of Priestly Passion.
Mm-hmm.